around the San Francisco Bay Area. It's time for Live from the Bay with Joey. Joey's guest today is Tippi Hedren, well-known star of that 1960s film classic, The Bird, as well as Marnie. Here's Joey.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Live from the Bay with Joey. This is Joey. We have a great and exciting show for you. Joining us will be Tippi Hedren. Tippi is a famous Hollywood star, as you know that, from her starring role in Alfred Hitchcock's movie The Birds. Also, she has many other film television credits to her name, as well as being a great animal activist. So can't wait to talk to her. What we're going to be doing today is we're going to be starting off with a few hot topics, bring Tippi on, and then we'll close it with a few more hot topics. So before we're going to go into speaking with Ms. Hedren, we're going to go over some top hot topics and that we're going to be covering, some interesting newsworthy items that deserve or perhaps do not deserve our attention. You decide. Jamin, are you there?
Yes, I am. What's going on?
Oh, we've got a good show. Of course, Tippi Hedren is going to be joining us, and before we do that, we're going to cover a couple of hot topics. I'm going to cover those with you, and then we'll have you call Tippi, bring her on, and then we'll close it with you and I going over a few more hot topics. Does that sound good?
Sounds great. Let's do it.
Okay, so you know what time it is. I think it's time we talk some hot topics. So what we're going to do is we're just going to crank it up with some hot topics.
We're just gonna crank it up, crank it up.
So let me ask you, Jamin, did you get a chance to see the Billboard Awards?
No, I did not. But I tell you what, there was a lot of news about everything that happened.
Yeah, there sure was. Well, first of all, you know, I kind of was really kind of shocked, I guess. You know, and I've been around the block. And it's not like, you know, I'm closing my eyes to everything that's distasteful to me. But I do think that really, quite honestly, ABC should have really had their hand in this. I really found it quite offensive. I think, you know, for any parents out there that had children, they would have had to really cover their eyes, especially with Nicki Minaj and Lil Wayne doing her her lap dance, and her gestures were just pretty much inappropriate. Now, they think that, well, I guess apparently this is Billboard's never gotten such high ratings, but quite honestly, it was pretty offensive, and I absolutely just turned the TV off when I was watching that. Because I thought it was over the top, and I didn't like it. And then another thing that really kind of bothered me was Mr. Justin Bieber. So he was actually booed during his acceptance award. Did you hear about that?
Yes, I did. And actually, I saw a clip of that on Yahoo. I played back a little bit of that clip of him standing there and some people in the audience, I'm not sure how many, but the audience was booing him, and he looked like all beside himself there.
Right. You know, I mean, first of all, you know, he goes and tells people, or he tells the audience that he needs to be taken seriously. And then he goes on to talk about how he's 19. Quite honestly, I don't care if he is 23 or 103. If he wants people to take him seriously, then he really does need to be cognizant of his behavior.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, respect is not, respect is earned.
Right. Right. You know. And so, you know, as you know, he's been in the news over and over again for just some pathetic behavior, as far as I'm concerned, you know, spitting in his neighbor's face, you know, exposing himself, you know, pulling down his pants in England, I guess that was. And then, oh my gosh, going to the Anne Frank Museum and making some kind of comment that was really inappropriate. And that, you know, again, I don't know if this is publicity, if it's a publicity stunt, I really don't care. But if you want people to take you seriously, dude, then you really need to be respectful. Not only respectful of other people, but respectful of your environment, respectful of other cultures, because otherwise, how is anybody going to take you serious? And you're 19 years old. Another thing, so he says that, I'm 19 years old. I think I'm doing a pretty good job. And then he said, that people shouldn't be dwelling on other aspects of his life. And he said, it's really all about the music. It should be about the craft that I'm making. Then he goes on to say, this is not a gimmick. I'm an artist, and I should be taken seriously. And all the other bull should not be spoken of. Well, first of all, reality is you've stepped into this position, and with that comes a lot of responsibility. Amongst that responsibility is taking good PR and bad PR. And to tell people that, that this other bull shouldn't be spoken of is, to me, was kind of a little bit offensive. What really became really super offensive to me is that he had the nerve and audacity to bring Jesus Christ into the picture to thank Jesus. You know, why do you have to do that? I mean, your behavior is really foolish. And by you thanking Jesus Christ and then your family and all this kind of stuff, are you trying to salvage your image? Because quite frankly, it's a poor representation, really, of who you are. And do you really need to bring that into the picture, right?
Oh, no. That's actually damaging his image, by doing that. It's just wrong.
It is wrong. I mean, it's just kind of, it's pretty ridiculous, if you ask me. So, anyway, enough of that. And then onward and forward to a couple of other things. I thought this was kind of interesting. This interesting facts. This is from Oh My God, taken from Oh My God. Scientists are trying to de-evolve a chicken into a dinosaur.
A what?
Yeah. So basically, and quote, I'm going to quote this, it's widely accepted now that dinosaurs didn't quite all die off when a meteorite hit the Gulf of Mexico. Some survived and evolved into modern-day birds. This genetic lineage might be the way that Jurassic Park could finally be possible. For example, scientists think that dinosaurs and birds lay eggs the same way. They have familiar bone, a similar bone anatomy. Modern-day birds, scientists agree, are closely related to a two-legged meat-eating theropods, I guess, and like T. rexes. So the key to reverse engineering a dinosaur from a chicken lies in the fact that many of the DNA instructions on how to build a dinosaur are still present in a modern-day bird. The genetic traits are either recessive or turned off. What scientists need to do is find a way to fire the dinosaur traits and suppress the bird traits during an embryonic development. And presto, you got a dinosaur. Of course, that is much easier said than done. And then there, you can get into the story if you want more and more. You can look at it, go online, look, Oh My God, and then just search for that. But, that's really kind of strange, if you ask me, because, as I'm sure you do, and many people eat chicken.
Well, now it's the other way around. The chicken's going to eat you.
Exactly.
Oh, could you imagine a rooster going off as soon as the sun comes up and a rooster does a croak? Imagine a rooster the size of a dinosaur going off, one rooster,
I know. It's pretty sad. So, anyway, pretty scary stuff. I mean, that's kind of, there's great things that scientists come up with, but then, the way their mind is, because they're so smart and the way things are in science now, they're going to be coming out with, I've heard, ways to extend our life beyond what we can even imagine. And then there's also, in the early stages, ways that we will actually be able to take flight. Like, say, for instance, I'm thinking, I wonder how my friends are doing in Hawaii. I would actually be able to get there and fly there really quick or transport my body there. So that's kind of and interesting things. So some really interesting, pretty scary things coming down the pikes. So another thing I wanted to talk about, since we're going to have Tippi with us, as she's a strong animal advocate, I don't know if you have seen these exotic cats. There's like the Savannah cat, which is actually a hybrid. It's a cross between a domestic cat and a another type of cat, an African serval. And have you heard about this?
Yes, I have. Actually, I saw some pictures of some of these Savannah cats.
So, you know, I'm going to talk to Tippi about this because I really don't know. I don't know. I've got kind of mixed feelings about this. And, folks, I'm going to tell you. There's a Savannah. And again, there's also a Bengal cat. Okay. And let me tell you, the Bengal cat is distinct. So it's a unique breed of a spotted domestic cat. Derived from the ancestral crossing of a few domestic cats, such as Abyssinian, American Shorthair, Burmese, or Egyptian Mau, with an Asian leopard cat. And, you know, in looking at this and hearing about it, it's telling you on the Bengal, especially, that it needs to be removed at least by four generations. So from its wild ancestor. They're highly intelligent and affectionate cats. But again, you know, I like cats and dogs. And I'm as well as a big animal advocate. However, do I want some type of animal that is a cross between a domestic and a wild animal? You know, I'm not sure that I'd want that in my house. I'm not sure that that would be good to have around children. If you have some thoughts about this, I definitely would be interested in hearing from you. You can always drop us a line at the show or send me an email. livewithjoey@hotmail.com, and just let me know, you know, what your thoughts are on that. But again, you know, I just think that it's kind of scary to think that you have a domestic that has been mated with a wild animal, and then you have that in your home. And I've read some of the stories on these, and they're not always the friendliest type of cats. There have been issues. And again, you know, their claws are going to be longer, bigger. Their bodies are just a lot. They're a bigger cat. So if you take a normal sized cat and you probably double or triple it, probably 2.5 sizes. You know, that's what you've got. So I don't know if I'm really comfortable with that. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to let you know that we are so happy to have with us today Tippi Hedren. She's a former New York fashion model. She was making her debut as an actress in a starring role in The Birds in the 60s after numerous and countless movie roles. Tippi continues to work and is currently working on some great upcoming projects. And perhaps we'll get a chance to talk to her a little bit about that. Folks, it is my pleasure to welcome with you today on Live from the Bay with Joey, Tippi Hedren. Hi, Tippi. How are you today?
Oh, I'm very well. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
I'm delighted.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. I wanted to start this interview with your early life, shall we?
Okay. How long do we have on the air?
That's great. Well, I understand that you were born in New Ulm, Minnesota.
Yes, but I didn't live there. I lived in Lafayette. I had to go to New Ulm to be born because Lafayette was so small that we didn't have a hospital.
I see. So, and how far was that?
Oh, I don't think very far. Maybe I'm estimating because I really don't know. But it was those little towns are fairly close together. It couldn't have been more than half hour, 45 minutes.
I see. Now I understand that your paternal grandparents were immigrants from Sweden, while your maternal ancestry is German and Norwegian. Is that correct?
Yes, you've done your homework.
I tried to. So tell me, were your grandparents very involved in your early life, and what was that like?
My maternal grandparents were.
Uh-huh.
Not my Swedish, not my paternal.
Uh-huh.
Because they were a great deal older. You know.
I see.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what fascinates me, I've been to Minnesota quite a few times, and it is notable that there is a strong Norwegian population there.
Swedish, mostly, yeah.
Yeah, and so...
Of course, you know, the Swedes and the Norwegians, you know, we've never gotten along.
Uh-huh. Did you ever have any of that type of cooking growing up?
Not that I am aware of.
No? So.
I don't. Oh, yes, at holidays...
Oh, that's
Christmas,
what I mean.
And, huh? Yeah, then we'd always have the lutefisk fish.
Oh, what
and,
is that?
It's a very smelly fish. It's white.
Uh-huh.
And we'd always have that at Christmas time.
Uh-huh.
And there's a wonderful drink that is so good. It has all kinds of berries and different things in it.
Oh, I have cousins that on one side of their family was, they were Swedish. So, again, you know, I remember during Christmas time, although I don't have that type of ancestry in me, but I remember at Christmas time when we would all get together, they had some interesting things and pastries as well. So that was always fascinating to me. And
mm-hmm.
I always love stuff like that.
I do. And, of course, we're staunch Lutherans.
Oh, really?
That's basically what
right.
Swedish
right.
and Norwegian, you know, very strong Lutheran background.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, holidays and that sort of thing. The church was very, very much involved with our plans for the holidays. Always.
I see. Well, that's nice. Now, I also understood that your father, was his name Bernard?
Bernard Carl Hedren.
Okay. And I understand that he ran a general store in the town of Lafayette.
Yes, he did.
And then I also understand that maybe he was the one that gave you the nickname Tippy. Is that right?
Yes, he did. My baptismal name is Nathalie K. Hedren.
Uh-huh.
And which was a lot for a little tiny baby. So my daddy started calling me Toopsa, which was, I believe, a term of endearment. And and then it went from Toopsa to Tips to Tippy.
Ah, well,
yeah.
That is. So and that's what you go by today. So anyway.
I do.
Now, I want to go back into, let's talk about your film career. There's many people, of course, that are familiar with your role in The Birds, your starring role in The Birds. How did you land that role in Hitchcock's movie, The Birds?
That's a long story, but I went to New York in 1950 to work with Eileen Ford, you know, the model agent. It was kind of great because my parents had moved to California, and I had was modeling then, starting mm-hmm. in Minneapolis, actually. And I saved up enough money to get me to New York from L.A. to New York. Sitting up on the train, I had enough money to keep me at the Barbizon Hotel for Women for a month if I wasn't a success, and enough money to get me back to California, sitting up on the train for 3 days. And I met with Eileen and on a Monday morning, and she put me to work that afternoon, and I made my quota the first week I was there.
Wow, that's
so
great.
I was very lucky. And then, of course, mm-hmm. that was in the 50s, and the advent of the television set came in, and, of course, along with that came the television commercial,
mm-hmm.
which became a very, very lucrative business, and... So I did a tremendous number of commercials. And in 1961, I had decided to move back to California because my little daughter, Melanie Griffith, was 4 years old, and I thought she ought to have a little bit of independence, just saying, I'm going out to play, Mommy,
mm-hmm.
which is something you can't do in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And so we moved to California, and on Friday the 13th of October, in 1961, I received a call from Universal asking if I was the woman in the commercial, the TV commercial for Seago. It was a diet drink, and it was sort of a storyline, not just a holding up a product. I said, yes, I am that woman. And he said, well, there's a producer who is interested in you. And I said, well, who would that be? And he said, well, come over and talk to us, and we'll discuss it. So I went over there, and that was on Friday the 13th, late in the afternoon. And he didn't tell me who it was. So all weekend long, I'm thinking, who is this person? Monday morning, I had to go back to pick up the reel of film of about 14 or 15 commercials that I had done. And my photo book, a fashion book, and I met all these different executives. Nobody would tell me who it was. And on Tuesday, they asked me to go to an agency, MCA, and I was told then that Alfred Hitchcock wants to sign you to a contract.
Wow.
And if you read the contract, agree with it, and sign it, we'll go over to meet him. So I was under contract to him before I even met him.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think that's probably the only case of that kind in Hollywood. I don't know of another situation. It is unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Well, I've got to tell you, I'm going to ask you, I don't want to go into too much about Alfred Hitchcock, I'd rather not, but I do want to know what it was like working with him. Now, I must tell you that he was, as a child, I know Melanie is your daughter, and I know she's married to Antonio, and I'm about Antonio's age. So I must tell you that... now, the film itself, The Birds, came out, what, 1963? Is that
63,
right?
63, yes. Yeah, okay. We're celebrating our 50th anniversary.
Wow, so this is great time for that.
It is.
So I will tell you, I was 3 years old. So I don't remember that. But I do remember watching it years later. And I must tell you, he was always sort of a scary character to me as a child, sort of creepy.
Uh-huh.
And at times, I would be watching his sort of monologue that he had.
Yeah.
And I would obviously watch the movie, but I would turn him off during that time because I didn't. And I would just go between the between the channels until he was off because I did not like him. And so... But I saw The Birds, and it was so impactful to me, and I'll tell you why. So I saw it later in the 60s, and I was really young, and my parents and I were headed up to the coastal area of Northern California. I can't remember the exact town that part of that was filmed in.
Bodega Bay.
Bodega Bay. That's it. But
it's not too far from San Francisco.
Right. It's not far at all from the San Francisco Bay Area. I remember arriving there, and I was petrified, and I was looking, you know, because, of course, there's birds flying, but I was lurking. That movie made such an impact that I think I was waiting for these birds to actually come down and attack us. That's how big of an impact that movie made on me.
Isn't that excellent?
It's just, it's unbelievable. And even to this day, when I go up in that area, now not necessarily to Bodega Bay, but I'm in that general area, and I'm around Jenner and wherever, even going up there, I get these really creepy memories of these birds. And I'm always looking above me, and... People are like, I was at Stinson Beach not that long ago, a few years ago, and I saw all these birds hanging out and flying above, and the people that were with me, they were like, Joey, what's wrong? And I'm like, oh, I just see all these birds flying all over the place. And they're like, yeah, that's just normal.
That's what they like to do, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I have to tell you a funny story, you know, with the lions and tigers that I rescue.
Uh-huh.
And have been doing so for 41 years now.
Right.
We serve between 400 and 500 pounds of meat every day. And, you know, the ravens are meat eaters.
Right.
And we have this huge flock of raven who live at the Shambhala Preserve. And because they know exactly what time my staff starts feeding. And they follow along throughout the whole Shambhala Preserve. And those ravens know which of the lions and tigers they can steal from and which ones they can't.
Isn't that amazing?
This is huge flock. I just love it.
Wow. Yeah.
And they're big and shiny and, oh, brilliant. They're wonderful.
Now, these birds never creep you out at all, huh?
No, they don't. So I'm sorry to say that. I should make up a story or something.
Yeah. Well, no, you know, one of your pictures, you've got a few of them with you.
Yes,
right?
Well, you know, there was the late Ray Berwick, who was the bird trainer. I adored him because of the way he treated the animals, the birds. And he loved them so much, and he was so careful with them and was so careful in their training and all of that. In fact, he would say sometimes, Mr. Hitchcock, we have to shut down. The birds are tired.
Mm.
You know, no, there was nobody there to say, Mr. Hitchcock, we have to shut down because Tippy's ready to collapse. You know, there was nothing like that. He was amazing, and there was one raven that he refused to train because the raven was so nice and so sweet, and so that raven became my buddy, and I called him that. And he's the one who we used with all the publicity, the one that sits on my arm, and he'd come and jumping into my dressing room and up on my dressing table and throw the makeup and things around, and then he'd sit on my shoulder and he'd sit on my head, and I just loved him.
That is pretty amazing. That is really amazing. Yeah, because I was wondering when I was looking at the pictures, I'm like, now is that real? Is that bird real or not? You know, because you know she looks awfully friendly with that bird, so that's kind of cool.
But you know, you can see the claws sinking into my flesh that he's hanging on to me. Look closely,
I am going to have to take a look at that closely.
Look at that.
Yeah, I will. You were also in the movie Marnie. So what was it like to work in that movie as well?
Marnie was the my favorite film that I did.
And why?
And basically because it was such a complicated role. I mean, Marnie had more problems than six women deserve. And it was a fascinating role to develop, and I had received such a wonderful education from Alfred Hitchcock about acting, because, you know, The Birds was my first film, so he was not only my director, he was my drama coach, as well as his wife, Alma.
Mm-hmm.
And but it was an amazing character to develop, and, of course, working with Sean Connery wasn't all bad either.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, now that comes to the great segue. This is a great segue into my next question. So you've worked with really great actors. Tell me of some of those that might be your favorites.
Well, you know, with The Birds, it was Rod Taylor. In fact, I just talked to Rod on Sunday. He was going to come out to the Preserve, he's going to do that at the end of the summer for one of our Sunset Safaris to be our celebrity guest. So we have over a period of years stayed in touch and that sort of thing. And, of course, Sean Connery. And then after Marnie, I did The Countess of Hong Kong, which Charlie Chaplin wrote and directed and did the music. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he did everything on his films. And and with that, I worked with Marlon Brando and Sophia Loren. So I had the ability to see the two different ways of directing, methods of directing with Hitchcock and with Charlie, and where Hitchcock was very, very, he was so well organized, and I mean, I don't know of another director who worked from 9 to 5 but him. We had our martini shots at 5 o'clock in the afternoon every day. The way he directed his actors was by conversation, and it was all done off set. And so by the time we got on set, we just did the scene. And, you know, you had to plan where everybody was moving around and make sure you hit your marks and all of that. But,
of course.
With Charlie, it was entirely different. The way Charlie directed was he would get on the set, and he would act out all of the different characters. He would become my role. He would become, Marlon Brando's role, Sophia Lorenzo. I mean, it was just awesome to see it. Of course, Marlon didn't appreciate that, being the method actor that he was.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he wanted to quit.
He
really,
oh, really
didn't like it. Yeah.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah, got a little grisly there every now and then.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. You know, I know everybody knows that you've had such a great film and television career, but just as impressive as that is your great humanitarian and environmental causes. And one thing that really stood out in my mind was the fact that you founded the Shambhala Preserve in Acton,
mm-hmm.
California. So tell me a little bit more about how that came into being, and
okay.
as well as how you came up with such a great name.
All right. It's a long story. I'll try to eclipse it. '69 and '70, I did two films in Africa. And during those years, environmentalists all over the world were saying, if we, people of the world, didn't do something right then to save the animals in the wild from encroaching civilizations, sport hunting, and poaching, by the year 2000, all of the wild animals in the world would be gone. So there was a lot of awareness going out, and my then husband was a producer, so we decided to do a movie. And after seeing a house that had been abandoned on the Gorongosa Game Preserve in Mozambique because it flooded during the rainy season, the man moved out, and a pride of lion moved into that house. And there must have been 25, 30 lions of all sizes. And we thought, bingo, you know, here's a perfect movie set, animals with which most people are fascinated with. And we got back to the States, and the script was written using sometimes 10, 15 cats in a scene. And we were going to have Hollywood acting animals, a nine-month shoot over and out. None of those things worked because the trainers of these cats came to us laughing, saying, you can't have that many cats working together. And we said, well, that's the way they live in Africa, you know, being smart.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, that's not it. It's the instinctual dictates to fight a cat they don't know. I don't want my cat hurt. I don't want to be hurt. Get your own animals to do the movie.
Mm-hmm.
First one was a rescue, and from then on down, and that was in 1972, that started the whole thing. And by 1980-something, we had 150 cats here that we had rescued. So I was learning a whole lot about these animals.
Oh,
how dangerous they are, and you know how all of us were hurt who were involved with the filming. It was frightening. It was very frightening.
Wow.
And I was also becoming very aware of the fact that there were no laws in our country to stop this insanity of breeding lions and tigers to be sold as a pet or for financial gain.
Mm-hmm.
And it became an industry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our government literally looks at it as an industry.
It's sad. That's sad.
Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah.
It's horrible. I mean, considering the fact that there is not one thing that we can give a wild animal in captivity that they need. We are literally breeding these animals to be in prison for the rest of their lives for doing absolutely nothing wrong. It's just cruel, and it's so dangerous. The hundreds and hundreds of children and adults who have been killed or maimed for life because of these animals. I mean,
absolutely.
It is insanity. It's
yeah.
insanity.
Now, currently, how many animals do you over at the at your preserve?
At Shambhala?
Do you house right now?
Yeah, Shambhala actually is a Sanskrit word. It means a meeting place of peace and harmony for all beings, animal and human. And that was a gift to me when I put the 501c3 together
mm-hmm.
in 1983. It's called the Roar Foundation.
Okay.
And that's in order to help with the fundraising, you know, because it's the national debt. I have lived with so much stress trying to keep the money together to keep this place going. I have to raise $75,000 every month. And that isn't building anything or repairing anything. I mean, we have, so you asked how many cats we have right now. We have 47. And we need to repair 10 compounds so that we can accept more animals. But the best part of this past week, last week, the bill that I co-authored and brought to my own congressman, Buck McKeon, in the 25th District in California. I took a bill to him, first of all, in 2003 to stop the interstate traffic of these animals as a baby step to, you know, having the breeding of these animals just halted. And he introduced it, and it was titled the Captive Wildlife Safety Act. And I testified for it, and you have 5 minutes in which to get your point across. So what I did was I just listed 18 or so accidents with these animals, starting with a 4.5-year-old boy had his arm ripped off by his uncle's pet tiger in Texas. They were able to retrieve that little arm, and due to the miracles of modern medicine, reattach it, but it's useless. 11-year-old girl went into the tiger's cage to groom the tiger with her stepfather. He closed the gates. The tiger jumped her and went for her neck, of course, as they always do, and killed her. A 17-year-old girl went with a group of friends to get a really cool picture for their yearbook with a tiger. They all went up, had their picture taken. She went up. The tiger moved, stepped on her foot. She screamed, and he jumped her again in the neck and killed her. And I went down about 18 accidents. I could have gone on for 3 days about accidents with these animals. And the bill passed unanimously in the House and Senate, and President Bush signed it on December 19th of 2003. It took 2 years before it was enforced, but it is working. But the best part is 2 years ago, we started working on another bill to stop the breeding of these big cats, lions and tigers. And I again took the bill to my Congressman Buck McKeon. He said yes, and we got it together, and it was just introduced last Thursday, May 17th, I believe. And it has a number now. The number is 1998, and the title of the bill is Big Cats and Public Safety Protection Act. And I can't tell you, this is a goal that I have had for so many years, 30 years or so, and it has now come to fruition where it has been introduced. And of course, now the work starts. Now we have to make sure that when we go to committee, that the committee understands the seriousness of this issue, and that the House and the Senate will vote favorably to have this bill put into effect, and that the president will sign it. So please wish us luck, and I hope that that all of your listeners will check us out on our website, Shambhala, Shambhala.org, and get the information about this, and to write to our legislators, and help us make history, so that the pain and misery that these animals have to go through will never happen again.
So I had a few other questions for you. We're talking about, the fact that there are people that are breeding exotics, and this is a real big issue with me. And I talked to Harlan about this. I don't know if he was able to talk to you about this, but I don't know if you've heard about, and I was talking about this before you came on, there are these cats called Savannah cats.
Oh, I know about it well. There's also a Chassie and a Bengal.
Yep.
That are hybrid domestic cat and small exotic cat, and it's a bad situation.
It is a really bad situation.
It's about as bad a thing as you can possibly get, and they're what I would like to do is suggest that the audience go to the Wildcat Sanctuary and get information about this. They can't even accept any more of these animals because they are such bad pets, and they're so dangerous, and you breed a wild and a domestic, what you get is a wild cat. And and then these people say, well, the cat turned on me. No, that's who they are.
Right.
Right. The Wildcats don't care where their urinate.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the biggest problems is that people have with them is not only the fact that they are loners, they're a one person cat. You don't want them around children or other animals. I mean, there's so many reasons, but one of the biggest reasons is they urinate on everything.
Right. Well,
you know, which is, and not only that. I don't know if you're aware of the fact that genetically these animals are so mixed up inside that they have irritable bowel diseases.
No, I didn't.
They have cardiomyopathy.
Oh, really?
Retinal atrophy.
Oh my gosh.
It's gingivitis.
Oh.
They say that the veterinarians say that these cats are the most expensive. You will pay more in veterinary bills with these, with this Bengal and Chassis and Savannah mix,
mm-hmm.
than with any other animal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's nothing good about having these animals.
Right.
And they'll, you know, and they can hurt you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and you know what really annoys me is I'm watching these videos that they have out. Now, obviously, there's breeders, and these things are not cheap. I mean, they're somewhere between $4,000 and $5,000.
Oh, they're thousands, yes.
Yeah, and they'll put them on a plane and send them to you and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, you look at them, and they have videos with children playing with them, and they're so nice, and, you know. But then if you investigate it further, you find out that there have been instances where they've clawed people, bit them.
Absolutely.
They've destroyed their other animals.
Yes.
And I'm thinking to myself, my God, why don't people get it? You just don't mess with
nature. Well, you know
why?
Because the breeders do not tell you. They show you this beautiful little film. You see these beautiful animals, and they have photographs of kids with them and all of that. But they will not take your calls if you want to return that animal.
That's unbelievable.
They will take no responsibility whatsoever. It's a financial deal. They're making millions on these breeding these animals, and it's wrong.
So then let me ask you, what ends up happening to these animals? I mean,
many of them have to be, the owners themselves would take them over and have them euthanized.
Yeah, isn't that sad?
If they're lucky, they can get into a sanctuary, but all of those sanctuaries are filled. And the best one that I know of, and they can't take anymore, they have said that they cannot. It says, please note, the Wildcat Sanctuary, which is in Minnesota, can no longer accommodate domestic Bengal cats or the other two, the Shaw
and the
Savannah, into our program. We cannot keep up with the overwhelming numbers of calls we receive for surrender or for them to go into sanctuary.
Jeez.
Our mission is to help the wildcats in need, and we will accommodate the hybrids only if there is room at our sanctuary. Now, that tells you something, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I just can't believe that these people continue to do this and are getting away with it. That's what's really bizarre to me. There should be something in place to stop this. I mean, it has to be.
Well, you know what? You're doing it right now. You're talking about it. And I'm sure there's a whole lot of people out there listening and saying, oh, my God, I had no idea. And a whole lot of people are saying, I'm sorry this program is on because there's a lot of people that are not going to buy these cats.
And you know,
and I hope that's what happens.
Yeah. You know, I saw one. It was kind of really shocking when I saw it because I saw it being walked by somebody and they had it on a leash.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I thought my eyes were going bad because it kind of looks like a cat, but then it looks like an oversized. I mean, it's like two and a half times the size of a normal cat. It was huge.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And I was thinking, my God, why would you even want to have something like this? And many times people do this for whatever, you know, for whatever sick reason they, you know, I mean, I hate to say it. It's not for, you know, they want to, unfortunately, some people have the notion that they want to freak people out, and that's why certain people buy certain dogs, because they want, you know, it's a power thing.
Oh, they want, you know, the celebrity of saying, oh, I have a wild cat.
Absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, folks, it's dangerous. And Tippy's talking about this. I'm talking about this. If you've ever thought about doing something like this, do not do it. Do not. I mean, just, yeah, stay away from it as much as you can, because I've read some of these horror stories, and it's absolutely, I mean, it's scary. It really is. And then you have videos that are promoting that these cats are the safest thing, and they're sweet, and they're loving, and they'll love your child. And they show these
videos.
Those
are all
with these
lies.
Kids. Yeah.
They're all lies.
It's sad. It really is.
Yeah, it is sad.
It's a really
sad. But
if you, I
would like to give this this website, wildcatsanctuary.org, O-R-G, and have people look it up, because you will get a, you will get exactly what the problems are, and all of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for talking about that. Now, I understand. Let's go back. There was a movie that you co-produced, I believe, with your daughter, Melanie Griffith. It was called Roar. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's how we got involved with all of this.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
We wanted to do a film about the problems that the wild animal has out there due to encroaching civilization, sport hunting, and all that. And it's a film that is so crazy, and the work that we did with these cats, and none of them were trained, and the fact that we all survived was a miracle.
If people are interested in seeing that, is there a way that they can still see it?
Yes.
Can they go?
Yes, we have it at the preserve, which is Shambhala.org.
Okay.
And you can get it through that, but. I look at the film and I'm exhausted when it's over. I still am exhausted because I lived through all of this. It took us 5 years to do it.
Oh my gosh.
And all of us were hurt. One, our first AD was almost killed.
Oh.
And, you know, that's when I really started thinking, what's going on with our country that we allow this kind of thing to happen?
Right. So, you know, this would be a good, folks, this would be a good, if you go to that website, which again is Shambhala.org, correct?
Yeah.
They will be able to see that. Is that right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Because
you will also get the information about the bill, and I implore all of you to read that and write to your congressmen and senators, and if you can find a legislative assistant in that legislative office to address it to, it'll have more of a possibility of being seen.
Mm-hmm.
But to just voice your opinion on this bill in a positive way to stop the breeding, or that you're crazy and you think that these apex predators, top of the food chain killers, should be in people's backyards.
Mm.
You know what the job of the great cat and actually all predators, do you know what their job is out in the wild?
Mm.
The reason you never see old animals, sick animals, lame animals in the wild is because of the lions, the tigers, the leopards, the mountain lions, all of the predators. It is their instinctive dictate to take out those animals, and at the same time they have their dinner.
Mm.
Now, what makes a pet out of that?
I have no. Is that perhaps?
And that will go as far as humans as well. It doesn't matter what sort of an animal it is, whatever it is, humans as well. And that was illustrated when Roy Horn, Siegfried and Roy,
attacked
Roy on stage. Roy had had a stroke on stage. And it was Montecor's job. He knew it. Montecor said, sorry, Roy, I got to do this. And attacked him.
That was, you must have been reading my mind, because that was my next comment, was that what happened with Roy.
Yes.
So.
And that was all kept very quiet. as to what really, really happened.
Mm.
And I know them both, and Roy has gone through so much to be as active as he is right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just been, and he was lucky. He was lucky. He had enough people there to get the cat off him.
Yeah. Well, you know, I will tell you, when I went to, now, of course, you mentioned like a sunset safari that you do.
Yes.
At Shambhala. That sounds so interesting.
It's beautiful.
Is it? Yeah. Now, is your preserve, is that open to people to...
Yeah, we're very exclusive. We're only open one weekend a month.
Uh-huh.
In the afternoon. It's a 2 to 3 hour planned program.
Uh-huh.
And I say 2 to 3 hours because it depends on at the end of it. I talk to everybody,
mm-hmm.
and you know, just share my experiences, our experiences,
mm-hmm.
our knowledge of these big cats, and.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really wonderful afternoon, and you can bring your picnic and hang out on the lake at the Shambhala Lake with us, and it's a really wonderful afternoon, and the sunset safaris are just during the summer because, you know, we're in the high desert and it gets very, very cold at night here in the winter,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we can't have the sunset safaris, but. Yes, we are, and we have an educational program for the children on Tuesdays during the school year.
Wow.
And, you know, we've been a very, very important facility to California Fish and Game, all the different state fish and game departments, the United States Department of Agriculture, the Humane Societies, all of them. Who are rescuing these animals and bringing them to us. And
mm-hmm.
now with this bill that's coming out, people are going to they're going to have to register with the USDA
mm-hmm.
if they have a lion or a tiger
mm-hmm.
or a leopard or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and they will be inspected. And
mm-hmm.
if they don't have the right kind of facility, the
mm-hmm.
right kind of security,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, horribly expensive to keep
mm-hmm.
these animals,
mm-hmm.
They are going to have to come to sanctuary. And, you know, so right now I get so worried because I need to get those 10 compounds built because
mm-hmm.
when this happens, we're
mm-hmm.
going to have to accept these animals.
Oh, wow.
You know.
Well, that's going
to
be costly.
It's bringing my stress level up to... a lot.
Yeah. Well, we don't want to stress you out anymore.
No.
But I would be very interested in attending one of these. You know, so maybe I can talk to Harlan about that in the future.
Oh, that would be wonderful. I wish you would, and I hope you will.
Yeah, that would be. You know, I guess I had a chance a few years ago to go out to Disney World in Florida, and they have a wild animal park. Type of thing, and they do kind of a safari thing out there. I don't know if you've heard about it, but when you encounter that and you're able to go out there and you get pretty close to where these animals are, you just realize you just realize how precious, not only precious their life is, but how you really do have to have a tremendous amount of respect for them.
Yes. Yeah.
And you don't want to overstep your bounds. And I think this is where people are really playing with Mother Nature. They're playing with things that they're playing with fire.
They shouldn't,
you know?
Be. That's right. And they shouldn't. There's not one reason to have a wild animal in captivity. I don't care what
right.
it is, whether it's a zoo or what.
Right.
You know, because, you know, and what do you learn about an animal when you go to the zoo? You see it.
Right.
You could put a cardboard cutout
right.
of a tiger, a lion,
right.
an elephant, or
right.
whatever, behind a fence, and you would learn just as much
right.
without having that animal live a lifetime of absolute boredom
right.
and frustration and
right.
misery.
Right. Right. Well, and this is why I even think with domestic cats, now you may disagree with me, but I think even with domestic cats, I was reading this thing on Bengals where, you know, they're like a mix, those Bengal cats, they're a mix of a domestic and, you know, yada, yada, with three or four different types of domestic cats. But, you know, even with some domestic cats, I've noticed, like, sometimes just not with all of them, because some of them can be very, very loving, but I've encountered ones that are just, you can see their wild nature in them, you know. Now,
absolutely.
I don't know how far removed they are, how many generations from a wild cat they are. I have no idea. Maybe you do. But,
yeah.
You know, I think sometimes people need to even be careful there, because
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too.
One example, I have a cousin that loves cats, and she has two or three. And this one time, her cat just, she just would not have, I mean, she was not a happy camper. And this cat literally not only clawed her, and this is a domestic cat, but
uh-huh.
she actually jumped on top of her head and was clawing her. I mean,
uh-huh.
unbelievable, and just grabbed. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, you know, this is kind of scary. I mean, it's
yes.
scary stuff. So I don't know, do you know how far removed, like, domestic, what we know as domestic cats are from a wild cat? Is it quite a bit?
Yeah, it takes like thousands of years to domesticate an animal. But I have to tell you, I heard this wonderful thing. There's a study, and I hope to be getting that study, that they have done about if you were to release a human,
mm-hmm.
a canine, and a feline,
mm-hmm.
people, dogs, and cats.
Right.
If you were to take them and just put them out into the wild where they would have nothing
right.
like the lives that they have right now.
Right.
The human would last not more than 24 hours.
Wow.
The dog a little bit longer. The cat said, yippee, give it a hand, let me go.
yeah.
I'm ready for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, because, and people just don't get it, you know. I mean, how many times can you, so we're talking thousands of years to domestic cat. But I think of the countless times that I've been in somebody's home or my cousin's house or somebody else's house, and I've noticed these cats go back, they pace back and forth,
mm-hmm.
back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, and they're looking at the owner and they're just pacing. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, now you can't tell me that that's not some type of wild streak, because this is an activity. When you see a wild animal, you see that same type of behavior. You know?
Yes, you do. Frankly, I feel very fortunate that our habitats are large enough that you don't see that kind of manifestation with the lions and tigers here.
Now, when somebody goes out to your preserve, and if they participate in this safari, what have you, how close are they really in proximity to all these?
Several feet.
Wow! So it's pretty close.
We have. Yes, you can see them very close. If the animal decides to grace you with his presence or
uh-huh.
hers, and many times the people say, well, I didn't even see that animal. I said, isn't that great?
Right.
You know, that it was so big, the cat didn't feel like, you know, being on show.
Right.
You know? And
right.
that's why we're not open to the public every day, because this place is theirs, and they deserve that tranquility. You know?
Absolutely. So do people go out? Do they go out like in jeeps or cars? Or,
No. You walk.
You walk.
It's a walking tour. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that would be pretty phenomenal, I would think. That would just be... That would be unbelievable to experience. So
yes,
now
it is a magical place.
Yeah. Now, are Melanie and Antonio involved with the preserve?
Yeah. Well, you know, they both love to see the animals, but they have very, very busy lives,
mm-hmm.
and we're over an hour away from each other, which just makes it difficult. at times.
Right.
You know, and they have houses all over the world, and, you know, so they're, and three grandchildren who are now, two of them are both adults, and Stella is 16. And, you know, they have a very busy life with their own things, so I don't see them as much as I would like to.
Right, right. Well, please, please do extend them an invitation for them to come join us, even with yourself, too, at any time. In fact, if you get a chance to tell Antonio, my family is from the same town in Malaga, Spain. Did you know that?
Oh, yes, yeah. Yeah, wonderful.
So, yeah, so, you know, let them know that. Yeah, we're actually from, my grandparents are from the same town. So both of them, both his wife, Melanie, your daughter, and him, along with you, you guys are welcome back at any time. And I know that you continue to work frequently in motion pictures. Even now, you're working on a few things. Is that correct?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about any?
Well, there's one that's... we need the producer needs $1 million, and then we can start filming. The title is Unforgettable, and it's a romantic comedy, and it's very funny. Funny. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Awesome.
Very excited about it.
Yeah. Well, Tippi, I thank you so much for joining us today. You know, the time went really quick. It's almost been an hour that we've talked with you.
Yes.
But I want you to let people know once again, if they want to get in touch with you or your work with the preserve, with the Shambhala Preserve.
SHAMBALA.org. Yeah.
Perfect.
If anybody out there hears me about our need for funding, it would be so welcomed. I'm really under the gun right now to get these things done, and I desperately need help. And I know the economy is awful, and
I know it is.
Where I understand that, I also have these terrible feelings of how am I going to do it? You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you're undertaking quite a bit, but you know, there's always a way, and hopefully, you know, you will get the funding that you need to move forward. So,
thank you.
What we're hoping. So, again, on behalf of us from Live from the Bay with Joey, thank you so much. Be sure to give my best to your daughter, Melanie, to Antonio. Again, they're welcome at any time. And it's been a joy having you.
Well, it was delightful talking to you, too. And thank you, because these things are very important.
Okay. Thank you so much. You have a great
thanks,
day.
Joey.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Jamin, are you there?
Yes, I am. Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful, terrific show and interview with Tippi Hedren.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, she just really, you know, just spoke of the importance that we, you know, the importance of respect of the animal. I know that's so close to your heart. But I think so many people are toying with things that they don't know about. And again, you know, we're finding ourselves in dilemmas. And one of these dilemmas is, how are we going to house these poor animals? And they really do need a place, a sanctuary. They do need a place that they can roam freely and not be, you know, not be restricted. And people really need to not have any type of domestic mix in their homes, because it's not right, and it creates some problems, not only for the animal but for the individual, for their families, for their children, for their other animals. And I think we've learned a lot about that.
Oh, I learned a tremendous amount today. You know, and you know, as you know, I'm a cat lover, and we have two cats, domestics, of course. They're not breeds or hybrids or anything. But, you
right.
know, I even respect their individuality, you know.
Right.
Like maybe I would prefer it to be more of a lap cat, but it's not. It's more independent. Well, I don't force it to be something it's not. You know,
right.
I make sure it's well taken care of and nurtured. And you know, it's like cats are very different. And I think that's what attracts me to cats, their personality, their way of life. And it does need to be respected. It does need to be. These wild cats are wild, and they will always be wild.
I think I remember you and your wife had one cat years ago. You know, there are certain cats that stand out in my mind that seem just more gentle and soft, and you know, of course, they're domestic cats. But you had a cat that was very loving, and that was very, you know, it seemed very different than what I've seen as, you know, most domestic cats, because most domestic cats out there, even though, like Tippy had said, you know, it takes, you know, thousands of years for them to domesticate, they still have this wild streak in them. And
well, they can have. Some have more than others, and it's knowing their personalities and knowing that streak. My cats are, in general, house cats, because we live in the town, in a townhouse. We don't have a lot of yard. We have you know, a small garden and stuff.
Right.
So, but you know what? They love going outside and hunting in that garden. In the shrubs and stuff. They love it.
I
love taking them out there and let them have a blast, because that's what they love to do. It's part of their mental
health. Part of their nature and part of their makeup.
Yeah, exactly.
And
exactly.
I think where it gets like what Tippy was saying, where it becomes a big issue is when you start to mix a domestic, you know, a domestic cat, you mix them with you know, more of, you know, a wild cat, then you're going to have real issues. You're going to have issues, and they're having them now. And as she said, there's no place to house these. So really, people really need to be cognizant. They need to be aware. And really also, they if people can support what Tippy Hedren is doing with her preserve, please go ahead and do that. We'll have that website for you folks posted as well. Again, Shambhala.org and Shambhala. Gosh, I have such a hard time with that word. Shambhala.org, correct?
Yes, Shambhala.org. And she also mentioned the Wildcat Sanctuary in Minnesota. And I believe that's Wildcat Sanctuary. .org as well, and that'll be something that we'll verify those links and post those as well, definitely.
Okay, that would be great. So, anyway, it was great having her. I hope she does return. I actually hope that, you know, I can arrange something to actually get down there and see that preserve. I wasn't expecting that it was a safari that you actually, it's a guided, you know, you're walking.
My first thought was definitely not walking. And when she said walking, my eyes got big here, and I went, wow, you know, that is incredible, you know, to be there with those cats on their turf. That's their home, she said. It's their home. And you respect that. And to be able to be in their home with them is an honor and a privilege.
Yeah. So that's pretty awesome. So, anyway, so I think what we're going to do is we're going to close the show and talking about a few more hot topics. We're talking about some interesting stories, you know, that have come about. And I thought this is a cute one. We were talking about animals. I couldn't believe this. This story is pretty astonishing. This story was actually about a penguin that fell in love with its zookeeper.
Oh my goodness.
Did you ever hear about this?
No, I did not.
Okay, so this is actually, people can pull this up from Oh My God Facts, but and I'm quoting you. I'm actually taking excerpts from this, but this was an actual little penguin that her name was Sandy. And Sandy, she fell in love with her zookeeper. And so that was kind of interesting, because what ended up happening was, so for years, I mean, she just, you know, she would, if there were a bunch of penguins walking in procession, she would actually, you know, jump in front of all of them just to see this guy that she was so in love with. And so Sandy, she was an African penguin that was transferred from a zoo in Nuremberg to this other zoo when she was a year old. And instead of her integrating into the other penguin population, she actually fell in love with her zookeeper.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, so that was kind of interesting. But what ended up happening was that that the story ended a little bit differently. So the zookeeper became sick for about 6 weeks and had to work from home. So this goes to show you that that penguins go back on a partner hunt if their partner is gone for a few weeks. So now, remember, this penguin was in love with this guy for like 10 years. So when the zookeeper came back, Sandy had moved on. She had chosen a younger, prettier penguin to be her mate. Anyway, I thought that was kind of cute. It was a cute,
oh, that is
little story.
Cute.
Yeah. So you've got an interesting story coming out of where is this? It's
Florida. And we talked about it on previous shows, and you know, it was real funny. I was just looking through some news, and here was this story on Yahoo about this enormous python was killed in Florida in is a state record. And I mean, a little background here. You know, the problem is people bring these pythons and other large snakes from other areas of the world. We're not talking about other areas of the country. We're talking about, you know, either South America or Asia or wherever they're bringing
these
snakes in. Yeah, wherever they're bringing them in, and they're not meant to be here. They're bringing them in as pets, and they're small pets, and all of a sudden they get big and big and big. And so what they do, especially in Florida, is they just turn them loose in the Everglades or in Florida, and now you've got these big snakes there. Well, there was this man. I guess he says here in the story, it was in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
He briefly wrestled
in Miami. In Miami.
Well, not in Miami. It's a Miami man. So he's from
Miami. Okay.
And this was a Burmese python measuring 18 feet 8 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now there's a picture of it here on this page where now that he killed it. There's these three people laying end to end on the floor next to this thing, and this python is just about, not quite, but you know, you put three people end to end, and there's this huge python there, you know. But anyway, so what they're saying is this is a state record as far as length, but that's not the point here. He was driving down the road, he hit his brakes, he saw about 3 feet of the snake protruding from the brush, okay. He grabbed the visible part of the python and pulled it out, began hauling it into the road. Okay, now, the giant constrictor responded by trying to wrap its body around one of Leon's legs.
Yikes.
But he was able to, dispatch the reptile with a knife. Okay, now, this is just crazy. It's just crazy. Could you imagine a big python? I mean, once these constrictors get you wrapped up, you're pretty much history. You know,
absolutely. And then again, this is what I mean. You know, when we bring it all together, let's bring everything together from today. What this really is telling us, folks, again, once again, is let Mother Nature have its way. Do not get involved in trying to, you know, if something is not supposed to be in your backyard, like cats or snakes or whatever the case may be, don't make arrangements to have that happen. Don't make them, you know, don't have them as pets. Hello, you know, wake up. Let's not do this because you're endangering yourself, your family, your kids. Just think. I mean, could you imagine? I've been in the Everglades, and you know, I just couldn't even imagine traveling there now, thinking that, you know, that there's these huge, huge snakes that might just pop out of nowhere. Again, you know, we've learned so much today about respect. You know, it's all about respect. And if we, you know, if we had respected from the very beginning the way it should have been, we wouldn't find ourselves in the predicaments that we're in right now. I mean, quite honestly, if these breeders, these cat breeders, didn't crossbreed a domestic with an exotic cat, right, with a wild cat, we wouldn't be in the predicament that we're in right now, where there is no place to place these poor cats. So
I know, and
they have to
I
be euthanized.
Thought...
I mean, that's kind of a sad thing. So again, we're going to put, and thanks for sharing that story, and we're going to put the address of Tippy's website on the show page, so you know folks will be able to see that. So anyway, I hope this was a good program for you, Jamin.
It was really good. Thank you. Thank you.
Enjoy it. Thank you. So again, folks, on behalf of us here at Live from the Bay with Joey, on behalf of Jam and myself, we just like to thank you for joining us. Be sure you stay tuned again. Join us. Listen in. We've got some really great shows coming up, great celebrities and great guests. And again, you can always go back into the archives and listen to some of the other shows that we have done, which are excellent as well. And again, we want to thank Tippy Hedren for joining us today. So again, until the next time, take care and have a great day.
Thank you for joining us today on Live from the Bay with Joey.